Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to Trends in Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell is your producer and call screener extraordinaire. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show where we explore what's going on in the trucking industry. It's a mix of new products, new services, and new technology. We'll also bring you expert guests from all areas of the industry, such as Bruce Mallinson on diesel engines and performance, and Mike Beckett on tires and alignment, as well as many others. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in with your question or comment. It's up to you. This is your show. Once again, welcome to Trends in Technology, and here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Trends and Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell's here screening your calls. There are still some lines open, but they're filling up fast. If you're listening online, you want to join us on the air, on the call itself, here's the phone number, 347-884-8327. That'll get you live on the call with us. If you're on the call and you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, go ahead and press 1 on your phone now, and Lisa will get to that. We'll screen your calls. We'll get you on the air here soon. We've got a lot of stuff we want to talk about tonight, and to start off the show with me, two guests tonight. I'm going to start off the show with David Koontz from Fleet Air Filters. A little later on in the show, we'll bring on Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power. And one of the things we're going to do with this show on a pretty regular basis is update you on the new technologies that we're testing. You know, so many things over the last several years in fuel mileage and maintenance and performance that we've proven work. I mean, we talk about those things a lot. We know that they work. We've measured the return on investment. We can talk about those whenever you want. But we're always looking for that next thing, sometimes the next big thing. What are we going to be doing next to improve fuel mileage, lower maintenance cost, improve performance, whatever it might be? And we've got a whole slew of things we're working on right now, and we're going to talk about some of those things. So if you've got anything you want to talk about, any questions, comments, topics, go ahead and press 1. Lisa will get to those. I'm going to go ahead and bring on David Koontz from Fleet Air Filters. David, welcome to the program.
Hey there. Hey, you got me?
Yep. You're here with us. Great to have you back here. You know, we talked about Fleet Air Filters before the truck show, and we had you on the program, and then we all got a chance to meet in Louisville and spend a couple days together, and I kind of hooked you up with Rod from Jones Performance, and you guys kind of clicked and spent quite a bit of time together, and you know, they were working on some air intake things and you were working on the filter side of things, and you two kind of got your heads together and came up with some new ideas. What's going on?
Well, I think what we're going to try to do, we got Slick, we've been looking at that truck, and we're going to try to build another housing for the filter to fit in and pick up some airspace between the canister and the filter itself. And see if we can't pick up some more airflow and a little more horsepower out of it and some fuel mileage.
Yeah, one of the things you guys came up with was the, you know, you've worked on the filter technology and you've got better airflow through that. Then you guys really got looking at the whole air intake system and some of the problems with the factory trucks, and you're working on modifying that.
Right. What we're trying to do now is we want to open everything up. And we believe that the canisters is the other equation to the filters. So I think if we can get the canisters now to open up some, along with our filters, I think we're going to see a significant amount of airflow, which is leads into more performance.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've talked about many times is that, and we've had some guests on other shows that have, I guess, not necessarily argued with me about this, but contradicted me in that if there were a way to improve things or if there were a technology that worked, that the OEMs would already be doing it. And how many things have you found wrong with many of the air intake systems on OEM factory trucks?
Oh, gosh. I mean, probably, you know, that's six or eight major things that we see. We see the air intake being too small. You get a 600-horse truck, and you're running a 5-inch air intake tube. I mean, that doesn't mix. It won't move the amount of air that it needs to move. So we're figuring out that if you go with a 6- or 7-inch intake, that's a lot more airflow. I mean, the restriction actually goes away. So
right.
What we're doing, we're trying to upsize everything, get it bigger, where there's basically no wall pressure on the filters. Everything's free-flowing. And, you know, therefore, you're going to pick up some mileage and you're going to pick up some performance out of it.
Good, clean, fresh air to the engine is what we need. And you know, the struggle, and, you know, I'm going to bring Bruce on later. And Bruce has always known that with the Vortox air cleaners, they were getting more airflow than many of the underhood. The problem I had with the Vortox was, you know, they kill aerodynamics, the big can sticking out there. And you really found that I believe you, that you can do better under the hood than the Vortoxes are doing outside the hood, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We can take one of our filters, and which I'm just going to say one of our 15-inch Vortox, and I can flow, I can't say equal amount of air as two of the duals, but we can get pretty doggone close. And one filter is going to do the job of what two of them is doing, but the downfall is you're going to have to clean this filter more often. I mean, you can't go,
right.
You know, there's guys going a year and not cleaning the air filter. You can't
right.
do that with a single. You're going to have to clean it 50,000 to 75,000 miles.
Which I don't think anybody really cares about. I mean, you know, if we can improve airflow, improve filtering, and, you know, clean up aerodynamics, you know, to change your filter maybe 25 or 30,000 miles early when we're talking about barely once a year anyway. It's certainly no big deal for me. And then the second part of that is what you just mentioned, is that not only is the entire air intake system a poor design, the filter itself, paper filter technology is just horrible.
Well, it hasn't changed in 10 years or more, or maybe even 15. I mean, we do a lot of testing on paper filters, and of course we do a lot of testing on our filters. And all filters flow differently. You know, on our opinion, you can take a filter that come out of a Vortec, and you can flow it, and you can take one that come out of an international truck or a Volvo truck, and you can flow that filter. And it's how the filter's put together, because the little Vs in it are smashed tighter, therefore that's more restriction. So depending on what filter manufacturer it is, we see different flow numbers for the same exact filter, you know, over and over. I mean, it's like you can't repeat the flow of a paper filter from one manufacturer to another.
Is that right?
No, not from what we see.
And the one thing that I found out when I started, you know, researching, I when I started realizing that, you know, we didn't have good airflow into the truck. And I've always run aerodynamic trucks, so I've always had to deal with underhood systems, Volvos, Sentry-class Freightliners, things like that. And I knew I wasn't getting the airflow I wanted. So I thought, well, maybe I should replace my filter more often just to keep it cleaner, keep more airflow. And it was recommended that I not do that because they told me the filter isn't very efficient when it's new. And it's flowing more air, but it's allowing a lot of dirt through.
Well, that's because if you took that paper filter and pulled it apart, it's only about the thickness of about maybe four pieces of paper, five pieces of paper. You know,
wow.
30 thousandths, 40 thousandths. It's not very thick at all. I mean, if you pull it apart and lay it out. So, yeah, right. I can understand that.
Yeah, so it didn't make sense, you know, because we don't want dirt into the engine. I mean, we could have great airflow if we just, you know, don't put in a filter. But
that's right.
We can't do that because, you know, we'll trash an engine. And, you know, one of the things you find even with filters, if you're allowing them to, if you're cleaning them too often or replacing it too often, the paper filters, replacing it because you can't really clean them, you'll actually get polishing in the cylinders from the fine dirt that's getting through, and we notice it in oil samples. So that's one of the things we're doing with your filters is we're watching, and you've done this all the time, watching the oil samples, and we're finding good, clean samples.
Right. We monitor ours pretty good, and I got a lot of guys that's doing some R&D for us, and they monitor theirs, and they're watching the silicon level in the motors. And, you know, pretty much my silicon level stays between 2 and 4 all the time. Now, if we're extreme dirt, it may get to 6, but the reason it's 6 is because we neglected on cleaning it, and it was just a little premature that we did get it cleaned. So that's what we're seeing.
Right, right, good. Hey, you know what I'm going to do? We've got Bruce Mallinson on the line. I'm going to bring him on if he let me see. Bruce, are you with us?
I'm here, Kevin.
Well, good evening. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm just wonderful, thank you.
How you doing,
Bruce? You know, this was something you and I had talked about a lot, was improving airflow, you know, without having the giant canisters hanging off the side of the truck. And we had come up with some ideas on design, and you're obviously working on a lot of things, and I'm working on a lot of things, and I didn't have the shop to actually, you know, do that kind of stuff. So it's pretty exciting to have now David and Rod, and these guys are putting their heads together, coming up with, you know, the best airflow we can get into the engine.
Yes, and you touched on some interesting things about OEMs, and we have heard this for years. If the OEMs thought that the truck needed it, they would put it on. If it was better, OEMs would put it on. One of the things I learned back in my years of hanging out with the Cummins engineers back in the 80s, I'd spend a week a month at the Cummins plant. And this goes on at Caterpillar, Detroit, Mack, you name it, this goes on. The engineers will work for sometimes 2 years on a project and come up with something really trick. And then the people in accounting, which they refer to as the bean counters, put a stop to it. And they actually get the final say, the people in accounting. And one of their sayings is, well, this has worked for us for all these years, let's just stay with it. Or why do we want to change now? Or how much is this going to cost to change? One of the things was the pulse manifold that came out for the Big Cam Cummins in 1982. That was right from some of the engineers that were into racing, and they wanted to make it as big as possible and make it to be perfect for a 400. The people up above said, no, we sell more 350s than we do 400s, so let's make the pulse manifold perfect for 350. And then it was marginal for a 400. And then Mark Chappell, the one Cummins engineer, came along to me and said, and you're taking 700 and 800 horsepower through this manifold? Why don't you make a manifold? Well, you know, it's not all that easy to make a manifold.
Right.
But what I'm leading up to is, do you know what I just found out at the Louisville show? The 14-liter Detroit runs the same exhaust manifold as the 12.7.
You're kidding.
Why do you make a bigger engine and then choke it with the stock with a 12.7 manifold? Because you don't have to recast it. If it bolts right on, let's use it.
Right. Whether it works or not, whether it's the best we can put on it or not, just use it. We've already got it. And, you know, the other thing I find is if you take something that we can ultimately produce for a pretty reasonable cost, when we're talking about, you know, really good air filters or your muffler, you know, less than $200. And people will say, well, It's a $120,000 truck. It's not that much money. If the OEM had that technology, they would just use it. But they count pennies on these trucks. Even though it's $120,000, they're literally counting pennies and dollars, and they won't do anything that increase the cost of that truck. I mean, if it works and we can sell it, there, like you say, the bean counters say, why should we change it?
Mm-hmm. It hurts the consumer also,
in the long run. If you think about it, back in around 1990, I think it was Freightliner was building 18,000. Was it 18,000 or 178,000 trucks a year? Maybe it was 178,000. The number slips me right now, but if you cut pennies here and dollars here, just think what that adds up to over that many trucks.
I guess millions
right.
of dollars.
Yes. In fact, I recently became privileged to get to know one of the engineers at Peterbilt in Texas. And that's how I found out that Peterbilt will only build two glider kits per week. Two. So, now that we've been doing these glider kits, guess who else is jumping on the bandwagon? A lot of the Peterbilt dealers. Our local Peterbilt dealer here in Pittsburgh has five glider kits on order.
Is that right?
That's right. And I understand that Clint Moore out at Kansas City Pete's building glider kits now, so everybody's getting on our bandwagon. It's amazing things that we start, Kevin, and other people were now wanting to get involved with.
Well, you know, other thing that we saw, and you know, I always wonder, is it really because we were talking about it, or is it just because they're, you know, good ideas and that their time has come? We've talked about, in addition to building glider kits, taking an older truck and completely reconditioning it, you know, not really worrying about what's the market value of this particular truck, but just putting whatever we need into it to getting that truck back the way we want it and pre-EGR engines and things like that. Well, right before the truck show, and you and I have been talking about that for over a year, right before the truck show, International comes out with a big program where they're going to be taking older trucks and completely reconditioning them and selling them that way.
Is that right? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, right before they made a big announcement right before the truck show, and then they made a big deal about it at the show, that they've got the program, they've got a name to it, they've got all this stuff going on, that they're going to take older trucks and recondition them. Hey, I'm going to do this. We've got a bunch of questions, so I'm going to leave both of you two on the line. So both of you guys, mics are open, but I'm going to start taking some calls here. Let's see.
Kevin,
can I say
one more thing?
Sure.
You know, as far as this, if it was that good, the OEMs would do it. Do you realize that the majority of the 14-liter Detroits running today are using the smaller 12-7 crankshaft damper instead of the little bit more expensive 14-liter damper? And it's considerably smaller in size, too.
Well, but they make a 14-liter damper.
I know they do, but it does cost about $125 or more.
So they make one, but yet they're putting the smaller 12-7 damper on the truck when it's new.
The 12-7 damper on the 14-liter. The majority of the 14-liters have the 12-7 damper.
Unbelievable.
It is.
All right,
it's really sad.
I know. And yet there are several people who come on as guests on other shows on the channel. And people will say, well, I heard Kevin talking about this, and they'll say, you know, and these are guys from the OEMs or from maintenance departments at some of the big fleets, and they've said for years, well, he can talk about that stuff all he wants, but if it were so good, the OEMs would be doing it. And I just, it makes me cringe every time I hear that. Unbelievable.
Okay.
Let's go to, I'm going to get some phone calls. Let's go to Chicago. Lonnie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. I talked with you guys here several weeks ago, the first time you had the filters on, and I went out and bought the filter for my Volvo. I have a Volvo D12, a 2006, 13-speed, and I have gotten, in the first 8,000 miles that I drove with the new filter, I picked up a solid 3/10 by taking out my Donaldson, I can say that, can't I? I taken out my Donaldson paper filter, and I also took my Donaldson cloth filter, the interior cloth filter, out also and replaced it with the foam filter, and in the first 8,000 miles that I drove, I picked up a solid 3/10.
Wow.
Yeah, David, that's one of your filters, and I've often believed, the Volvo engine, when it first came out, I really thought that the design and the engineering that it held some promise, but I was so disappointed with them. Fuel mileage and performance, it just wasn't there, and the more I looked at it, the more I thought, I just don't think this engine and this design breathes very well. So I think it's one of the trucks that really benefits from your filter.
Absolutely. We've got, I just got a Volvo in today. A filter housing is one of the newer ones. And we're actually looking at it now to see if we can redo it.
Is that right?
Yeah. It just redesigned the whole housing itself. Because he probably has one of the housings that the filter is really too close to the wall.
Yeah, actually, my filter does sit exceedingly close to the wall, and I think that if we could open some things up, I think that would definitely help on the air side. And I think the other thing I wanted to mention, Kevin, as an aside, not only are you you're saving $2.75 a gallon, it would only take me 7 weeks at 2/10 to pay for it, okay? And, of course, I'm exceeding all that, so I'll be making money with my filter and reducing, my bottom line for expenditures because I'm just going to clean it and re-oil it and put it back in, so I won't be putting in a new filter every year. But the other thing that I think that is kind of overlooked is what David's doing is he's asking us to take our old filter and sending it back to him, and he's actually reclaiming all the parts to build new ones. So it's really a win-win situation because we don't have to throw the old filter away to the landfill. We just send it off to David, and then he just tears it apart and builds the new good filters out of those core parts. And I think that's a really, it's kind of a neat thing to say is because, at least we did the right thing with our old filter. We recycled it.
Yeah, let you go here in just a second, Dave. The whole project that we're working on, the truck, fuel mileage, efficiency, lower maintenance cost, bypass oil filters, we're probably one of the greenest projects around, and that's not really what we talk about what we're doing it for. We do it for the bottom line, but I think we're pretty green.
Absolutely.
Well, exactly, and I just think it's just really great that, we can do the right thing, we can pick up the mileage, and then we turn around and we did the right thing, we didn't add to the landfill, and I wouldn't be surprised if David hasn't got some way to take care of the paper so that we're at least not putting that in the landfill too. But anyway, I just wanted to report back that I did get it, and I'm really happy. This week obviously did not help me on the fuel mileage. Spring's here, the wind's up, and so, that's not going to look good on that. But as soon as we get out of spring and the wind settles down, I think we're going to see great things out of these filters. And like I said, I was just really impressed with the first 8,000 miles that I did on the filter.
Hey, we appreciate it too.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Let's see. Let me grab another call here. Let's go to hold on. I've got a question from the chat room. David, this one's for you. Ken says, can we blow out diesel air filters like we did on the car-type filters? And I'm assuming they're talking about the standard OEM paper filters.
Yeah, that's the wrong thing to do. You don't. When you blow a filter out, you actually blow holes in it. And that's the worst thing you can do to air filter. You would do better to beat it on the ground and try to beat as much dirt out of it as you can and put it back in other than getting in there with the air hose and start blowing it. And we've done some testing on that, too, and just to see what happens. Eventually, it splits the fold line on the paper.
Not a good idea.
Absolutely not.
So we take what I consider to be a bad product or an inferior product, and we make it worse. The last thing we want to do is end up with any kind of a breach in that system.
Yeah, that would not be very good.
No, definitely not. Let's go to Matt. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin, Bruce, and David.
Hey
there.
Well, you're talking about doing some modifications for air intake. I'd like to volunteer with a 379 to try out anything you guys come up with for under the hood.
Hey, this is a great truck to play around with too, David.
Yep.
Matt's got what we call the original, the first signature 379, because, you know, he took the typical 379, big horsepower, all the stuff, and he started doing a lot of the things, you know, that we've played around with. Matt, what have we done with your fuel mileage since you started all this?
Well, I've owned the truck since brand new, and I'll have 1.4 million on it here next week. And for about the first 5 to 6 years that I owned it, it was, you know, between 4.9 and 5.1. You know,
ouch.
For year over year. And since I did everything with Kevin, I'm breaking 7 now. I haven't got it to a yearly average of 7, but I'm hoping this year will be that year.
Getting close. Can you believe that, David?
That's strong. That's very strong numbers.
Yeah, and you know what? The last caller talked about calculating his savings on the filter and repaying it in 7 weeks. But he was using 275, and I don't know if everybody's noticed. I think this snuck up on me. Fuel national average is at 308 today.
Yeah, it was 302 here in Mobile.
Yeah, the national average today, I just updated my numbers before the show, is 308. It kind of snuck up on us. You know, it was a 2 and 3 cents a day for the last couple weeks, and, you know, oil prices back up to that almost $90 a barrel mark. So I think we're in for an expensive summer of fuel again.
I think so. You know, talking about his truck, Kevin,
yeah.
He's got the cans on the outside now, right?
Right.
Yep, I got the big four card.
Yeah, if we could get one filter under the hood and pick up some fresh air, you could drop your cans off the outside. And if we got you 3/10 better than what you are on just airflow, I'm thinking, I don't know what kind of numbers you come up with just on the aerodynamics part of it, but it's possible to see a 0.5 mile per gallon out of that deal.
I think so. I think,
yep.
You know, if you were to take that truck and drop the cans off, put the... Matt, did you talk to Jones Performance? Are they going to make that hood for yours?
Not. They're working on it all on their own. I didn't talk about anything with my truck with them, but I chatted with them a little bit.
Yeah, I know they, you know, they're working on the bumper, the hood, all that stuff. I think you can get right now for the W9. But that would, I think if you start talking about the hood and the canister and the airflow, 0.5 mile per gallon is, I think, pretty reasonable to expect.
Yeah, I know that when I was talking to Rod the other day, we was talking about building this air filter up under the hood. What we're going to do, we're going to open it up, we're going to make it match the hood, then when you let the hood down, it'll actually make it a positive seal and you won't pick the heat up off the motor neither.
Wow, that's a nice idea. So the hood itself is going to come down and close the air intake?
Yes, it's going to close it off. Then what we're going to do, we're going to pick fresh air up from the outside, you know, off the side of the hood, or if you got a, you know, the little cowl hood or whatever like he had on Slick, you know, we'll pick it up off the back or whatever. But I know it can be done. I mean, We've done it in sprint car racing for 25 years, so this is not that much of a challenge to us, really. I mean, I can see
right.
it working extremely well.
Yeah, pretty exciting. So,
and
so
Kevin,
as
you know, I'm a numbers guy. We were just talking about fuel prices and all that. And
right.
this was a few weeks ago. I ran some numbers from my old mileage. I took 5, and I used more of my latest average of 6.85, and
right.
I run a little over 150, 160,000 miles a year.
Yeah.
And I'm saving about $26,000 a year.
That's a lot of money.
What, isn't that amazing? $26,000 a year in savings. You know,
yeah.
there are people, lots of people, who work pretty darn hard all year to make $26,000.
Yeah. And that's just fuel. All
that,
the other
yeah,
wear and tear on the truck is down, too, because of the speed, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the other thing, and I haven't talked about this a lot, when they measure lifetime of an engine, you know, we always assume that they use some mileage number. Like people say, well, you know, can I get 1,000,000 miles out of an engine before I have to do an in-frame? And the number itself is all over the board. Sometimes trucks are being redone at 700,000. Sometimes they're making it to 1.2. It's kind of all over. But what I found talking to the engineers was, When they do their predictions and their half-life calculations and all the things they do, it's really never done on a straight mileage. Actually, one of the biggest factor they look at is fuel consumption. How many gallons of fuel are going to be run through that engine is a much better determining factor of how long it's going to last. So the better fuel mileage that an engine gets, the longer its life is going to be.
Absolutely, because it's cleaner.
Yeah.
And that's also true, which doesn't affect us anymore because we found a better way. But that was originally the whole idea with changing oil, too.
Right.
Was on number of gallons burned.
Should have been based on fuel consumption because it's the process of combustion that causes all the problems in an engine. I mean, that's what an engine does. But the more combustion we have and the more fuel we're burning, the more byproducts we get, the more wear we have on the engine. So, you know, there are just a ton of benefits. So you're officially volunteering as a guinea pig, Matt?
Yeah, I David, I could give you a call on Monday and get you my information and
whenever
you come up with anything. Because I also am kind of in a good situation like Kevin with his truck. I run a dedicated lane. I run from Minnesota to Florida almost every week, so I'm on the same stretch of the road and got a pretty set weight. One way I'm about 77, 78, and about 68 on the way home. So
we would be interested in working with you on it. I'm going to go to Rod and him's place probably in the next 4 to 6 weeks, and we're going to sit down and try to redesign that air filter on Slick, but of course it's going to be on another truck we're going to be doing it on. And I think when he does his testing, he's going to come back and stick it back on there from what I was gathering. But, yeah, I'd definitely be interested in doing that.
Okay.
Sounds good.
I will,
all right.
I'll give you a buzz Monday and just get some contact information. And we'll get together in the future.
Yeah, you bet. Sounds great.
Good. All right, good talking to you, Matt. We're going to move along to Dennis in Tennessee. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. Bruce.
Hey there.
Hey. I have a T600 Studio with an N14 460 500 5 1/4 select, and I got it set at 460. Always had it set at 460. It's got 1,045,000 miles on it, and it tossed number 6 hole out of it a few weeks ago very, very unexpectedly, so I had the engine completely majored and just, you know, liners, pistons, heads, injectors, the whole bit, okay? At 5,000 miles, the thing keeps blowing the oil stick, the dipstick out of the dipstick tube. And I took it back to Cummins, and they said, sorry, guy, don't know how to fix that. Isn't that a wonderful thing for Cummins to say to me?
Yeah, that's a nice answer. I always like that one.
Yeah, Yeah. They found several other things wrong, like a leaking oil pan gasket from the guy that rebuilt it, and they fixed that. And they found an ejector that was skipping a little bit, so they fixed that. But it never addressed the problem of the dipstick blown out of the tube. And if I take the oil filler cap off, either off the valve cover or off the side of the engine, it's just puffing a large amount of air out of it. And the blow-by itself has just got a very small amount coming out the tube. Do you guys got any suggestions or how we're going to cure this problem?
Yeah, I got a couple for you.
Go ahead. Sorry?
Number one, take the blow-by tube off and clean it out and make sure.
I did that already. I've done that already. Okay. I've done that part.
Did you put those rubbers that squeeze down on that dipstick tube, put a new rubber on there?
I did that also, sir. So we're there.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I tried to pull you out of the water. I just already did a few of those things myself.
Can you stop by our shop? We'll put the manometer on it and go for a ride and measure the inches of blow-by.
In Pittsburgh?
Yes.
It could be very possible I could do that.
Okay,
it
could have a faulty turbo on it.
Okay.
A turbocharger sometime can put compressed air into the bearing housing of the turbo, and it goes down the drain, oil drain pipe, and causes excessive blow-by.
Okay. It had a turbo. I lost the turbo on this engine approximately 10 months before that, and I had a brand new turbo, so I didn't put a recon on it. So I put a brand new one on it about 10 months before this tossed this piston aligner out there. I was looking also thinking possibly if somebody didn't, when the man built the motor, if he didn't line the ring gaps up opposite of the wrist pins. Is that possible or not a possibility?
That's possible, but gosh, everybody knows not to do that. But, when we take the Caterpillar cylinder packs apart to ceramic and Teflon coat and balance the pistons, you occasionally will find them where they're lined up. So, which Cummins distributor rebuilt it?
Cedar City, Utah. It tossed it out in Beaver, Utah when it happened. I live back in northeast Georgia. It tossed it going down the road with a 16,000-pound load on it. And he said I overheated the motor, and I'm just too good about it. I've owned my truck for this truck since it was new and three other ones. 38 years of being out here, 25 years being leased to the same company. You don't sit on the just Dumbo right on the street and let the thing overheat. You see a hill coming, I kick my manual fan on, and that's how I ran it up the hill. And so anyways, bottom line thing is it keeps plopping that dipstick out, and I cannot seem to keep it in.
Distributorship or Cummins dealership?
Well, that's something I don't know now. Dealership and distributorship, what's the difference now? Both of them are...
Well, the distributorships are they have the huge buildings with 12 and 14 bays.
He was a mom and pop kind of shop, like 18 mechanics in the shop, Cummins Caterpillar logo on the front of the building, and that's what's on my receipt too. So he was the closest Cummins dealer to me. It was 300 miles to the next place that was Cummins. So any ideas here, fellas? Shall I try and bring everybody up to you, Bruce? Hello?
Bruce?
Hello?
What happened to Bruce? Yeah, let me see. Let me see if I can find his line here. Where did he go?
I promise, Kevin, I didn't hang up on him.
I didn't. Sometimes Lisa does this just to mess with me. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Great.
I don't see him anywhere, so we'll have to wait and see. I don't know if he's going to be able to get back in either if we lost him because the lines are just jam-packed.
Did I get blamed for that again?
Well,
yeah.
Sometimes I do those kind of things just to mess with me.
I really didn't do that.
So
but I
we
heard
just
talking about me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruce was talking about
I was actually just talking to Matt. He just made a U-turn. He's on his way to Alabama now.
Hey, tell Matt to come on because, I got to be at the racetrack tomorrow night, so I can see him Monday morning.
He is so excited. All right, hold on.
Kevin, I took oil samples of this motor at 5,000 miles. The silicon was at 15. And prior oil samples on it was at 3, 4, 3, 4, and stuff like that. And at 5,000 miles, I took an oil sample on this engine since they rebuilt it. And, like, copper was up to 18, which is way higher. But I'm kind of expecting that a little bit just because the new parts may be in there. But the silicon level was, like, 15. It was just horrendous.
That's high.
Yeah. All of the wear metals, they never worry me when they're high after an in-frame. We expect them. You're going to get a lot of wear metals in the beginning, but there's no reason whatsoever to have that kind of silicon in that oil sample, and that's not good.
You know, I think Bruce may be right on this turbo deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's starting to add up. His silicon level's high. He's probably sucking air somewhere, and it's forcing it down in the intake tube like what he's talking about. I mean, the return tube. So, something's going on.
All right, so here's a test question. The motor will run without the turbocharger on it. Could we take the turbocharger off it and see if it improves our blowback?
It'll run.
Now.
I'm not talking about driving it down the street. I'm talking about idling it.
Hey, I found Bruce, guys.
Where is he?
He's all the way at the bottom.
All right. Hold on. Let me... What line?
412.
Give me a line. Okay. Let me grab him. Bruce, you back with us?
I am. I lost you on my landline.
Oh, okay. There you go. We got you back. You might be on to something with the turbo on this, because the other thing he just told us is that he's got really high silicon in the oil sample, which means we're getting dirt in from somewhere.
Yeah, but, you know, the first couple oil samples on a, like you had said, on a in-chassis or an out-of-chassis are usually high, and then they'll work their way back down.
Yeah, well, you know, and I'll check with the lab to see if that's true about silicon. I mean, we always expect to see the wear metals up. I guess we could be getting silicon in just from the rebuild process itself, but he had some pretty high numbers in 5,000 miles. I'll look into that and see if that's common.
15 times.
When you're doing a 60 series, you have to use the Detroit silicon around the front cover, and some of it will seep into the oil, and it'll give you a high silicon rating, but yet it's not ingested dirt.
Okay.
Recently had that on one.
Bruce, we just asked this question while you were off the air there for a second. If the motor will run without the turbocharger on it, idle. So we
right.
could eliminate the turbocharger out of the link, and if we still get the large amount of blow-by, then that's going to 86 our problem with the turbo, would it not?
What you could do is you could take the turbo off, plug the turbo feed line. You could run it on a dyno, and you could run it up to 250 horsepower without the turbo.
Okay. Is that something you can do for me, Bruce?
I can't run it on the dyno, but we're pretty good at finding blow-by, so.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know, I hate like hell, but I've already spent a ton of money on this thing, and I just hate like hell to have it like it is now. It's not right. I'm not happy, you know, and I just want someone to give me some straight answers about it.
Well, give us a call. Stop by. Let's put the manometer on and go for a ride and see what we can find.
I'll try and do it next week on my way back east.
Okay.
And I'll call you, Bruce. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, both of you guys, we've got a couple more callers. We've got some things I want to talk about. We're down to about 15 minutes left in the show. David, if somebody's interested in the filters, you know, we're talking about new housings and all these new designs you're working on, but as far as filters go, you've got filters available for just about every truck, right?
Pretty much anything, yeah.
Okay. If somebody's interested in that, how do they get a hold of you?
Area code 251-654-0892. That's our shop number.
All right. Do that one more time and do it slower, because if I can't write it down, I know guys driving on trucks can't.
All right. This area code 251-654-0892. Or you
all
can
right.
get it on the web. At fleet-airfilters.com.
All right. So, and I know we were assuming, you know, because we've talked about the product before, that everybody on the call knew what we're talking about, but we get a lot of new listeners all the time. What we're really talking about, the product that you've got, it's available, it's in stock right now, it's not experimental, we've already proven this technology, is really a lifetime foam filter that replaces your paper element. You wash it and put it back in the truck, it's flowing better air, we're getting better fuel mileage. So just to let everybody know, that's done. I mean, that's a product, we know it works, you've got it. When we talk about the experimental stuff, we're just looking at new intake systems and things like that. But the filter's proven, and you've got them, and people can buy them, and they're working great already.
Right. And I've also got that new directional filter that we got out, the aluminum top and bottoms with the cones. We hadn't got all of them in production yet, but we have the most common ones in production.
Good. Good. All right. And Bruce, if somebody needs to get a hold of you about whatever, I think most people know the kind of things that you can help them with. How do they get a hold of you?
724-360-4080.
Excellent. And I think we've got, Lisa, do I have any calls I haven't got to yet? Let me see where Lisa went. Is she paying attention? Let's try this one. I don't think I've gotten this call. Bill in Canton, welcome to the program. Lisa, are you paying attention?
Of course I'm paying attention. Bill in Canton would be fine.
I got him. Thank you. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate what you guys are doing. I got two questions. One's not that important. The important one is for you and Bruce. I was just called about an oil sample, and we're trying to figure out what's wrong. It's a 07 Coronado. It's a glider kit out of Kentucky.
Okay.
It's got a 9860 series in it, 12.7. I'm running Schaefer DuraBlend oil, which I know you want to try it. I recommend it. But at 20,000 miles, I had lead at 20. At 37,000 miles, I had lead, or the lead was 17. Then at 37, it was 20. The soot went to 4.3. I got a OPS pure on here. I put it on dirty oil, so I change oil at 37,000. Okay, put a new air filter in it at the same time, run a sample at 14,600 miles. Soot is up to 2, and the lead went to 26 on clean oil. All the other metals, everything seems to be fine.
This is, and did you say it's 14,000 on the engine itself, 14,000 on the in-frame?
No, it's got 270,000 on
it. Oh, okay. I was going to say that, you know, lead, one of the first things we think about are bearings, possibly solder. Well, this has been climbing. I was going to say, I don't know. There are some additives that can show up as lead as well, and I would assume if it wasn't there and it's climbing, it's not something that's in Schaefer to begin with. You're not putting in it additives, right?
I'm putting a fuel additive in that is Schaefer's fuel additive.
Okay. There are some additives that can show up as lead. The soot is kind of perplexing, though. It almost indicates that we're not getting complete combustion. I mean, that engine itself is a really clean engine when it comes to soot. I mean, when that engine's right, you won't see hardly any soot at all in the oil. So I'm thinking something in the engine itself isn't running right. Bruce, what do you think?
I'm wondering if it isn't the oil cooler. This was a glider kit. Was the oil cooler replaced when the engine was rebuilt?
I would guess no, because they put a used air compressor on it when they put it back together.
Okay.
I'm a guess that the people in Kentucky used an old one. That'd be my guess. I don't know for sure.
That might be.
They either changed that my contact at Detroit, I can't call him at this hour of the night, but...
Yeah, the air-to-air is okay. I've tested it. It does not leak. There might be an issue with the air intake gasket.
Do you have your oil analysis there, and does it tell you where iron can come from? I'm not iron. Lead can come from.
No, yeah, I don't have it.
Lead mostly it's an overlay metal in main and rod bearings. Some places where we might have solder, we might get lead from, and then it's an additive. But those are about the only places we get lead from.
Yeah.
Okay. Back 55,000 miles ago, I put motor coat in it.
See, motor coat can show up as all kinds of goofy things. I'm going to make a note here. I'll do some checking on whether or not we see actually the lead number isn't all that worrisome. I mean, that's not a huge number, and there are some other places that could be coming from that I wouldn't worry too much about the lead. The soot, though, what did you say was 2-something?
It's 2.1 with 14,600 miles on it, and it's got an air filter put in at the same time.
Very unusual for that engine. Like I say, that is a really clean-burning engine when it comes to soot. What's the TBN?
I couldn't tell you. I don't have the sample in front of me.
When was the last time the overhead was set?
It's 70,000 miles ago.
Okay.
I do it every 100.
Okay.
The parameter's been running hot, too. I come across northern Ohio Tuesday night with 28,000 pounds at 58 mile an hour, 8 pounds of boost, 900 degrees.
And you're on the cold side? Your thermocouple's in the exhaust pipe?
Yes, it is.
Wow. What about when you're pulling a hill? What's it go to if you're wide open?
Wednesday in Connecticut, pulling the hills, it was 90 degrees outside. It go to 1,000 at the blink of an eye. They go up and stabilize around 1,150.
1,150, so add 300 to it. You're at 1,450. What's your turbo boost when you're pulling hard?
About 28.
And is this a 500?
Yes.
Something's not right here.
Now, something. Yeah,
you're running way, way too hot. For 28 pound of boost, you should be at 30, but still 2 pounds would only account for 50 degrees, and you're running extremely hot.
Yeah. No,
where do you live? What part of the country are you from?
I live down by Lancaster, Ohio. I've actually met you. I had an international. You set the summons up for me.
Okay.
So I know where you're at.
I think you ought to make an appointment and try to get into the shop and let's find out what's wrong. Is this a D-Deck 3 or a D-Deck 4?
I'm not 100% sure.
Is there a wastegate on the turbo? Is there a diaphragm with a rubber hose going to it from the compressor housing?
No.
There's not. So it's a D-Deck 3.
Okay.
Why in the world are you running that hot?
Yeah, and that's where... You know, the soot problem, we're probably going to start to see high nitration numbers in that oil sample, and there's something isn't right in the engine.
Gosh, the truck that towed our glider kit was a D-Deck 3. We were only at 72,000 down to Louisville and back with a power box on it, and our straight through mufflers. Oh, let's talk about that. Do you have stock mufflers on this?
I got a 24-inch resonator underneath.
Is the resonator straight through? You can put your arm through it. And you've seen that.
No, I haven't. I was told it was.
Yep. You better pull that off tomorrow morning. I'll bet you have the resonator. Do you know if it's a Dynaflex?
I don't know for sure.
Okay, I'll bet you have one of those resonators that has that block-off plate right in it, and all the exhaust has to go through the small eighth-inch holes. Either replace that or knock that plate out if the plate is there.
Okay, yeah, I will check that.
That's where I would start, because you are running. There's where your soot is. It's for some reason, you've got a restriction in your exhaust. You're making a lot of heat. Is your fuel mileage down?
Real light this trip. I'm at about 6.2. First quarter, I averaged 6.01 for the whole quarter, and I run to Massachusetts and back 28,000 to 30,000 in the box average, and I run it hard.
Yeah, an exhaust restriction could certainly account for a lot of those things.
Yeah,
okay, I'll pull that off tomorrow. Check it.
I would be pulling that resonator off in the morning and taking a look at that thing.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, the test we could do years ago, we put a spot mirror up on top of your mirror so you could see your stack. And then you get into it and you accelerate hard and you look at the smoke. And if the smoke is falling out the stack, that means that we have a restriction. But with the electronic engines, we don't have the smoke.
Right.
Well, I got
so,
smoke.
So we can't see that.
Yeah,
I think the problem's in that resonator, and I would pull that off and look inside there. Boy, if that's a Dynaflex and it has that plug right in the middle, that's bad.
Yeah, I don't know what kind it is. I didn't put it on. But I do have a lot of smoke. I see it every time I shift.
Every time you shift, if you're pulling hard and you push it to the floor and you shift and push it to the floor, is the smoke coming out hard or is it just kind of falling out the stack?
Geez, I couldn't really say.
Okay.
Even going down the road under a load, I can see smoke.
If you can see smoke, pull in a steady grade at 28, find a boost. If you have a haze, then you need a set of injectors.
Okay.
Because you're not atomizing your fuel. But that still wouldn't make that much heat. I think you've got a restriction in your resonator.
Now,
okay,
that would account for the soot. If the injector's bad and we're not atomizing the fuel, that certainly would increase the soot number.
Okay.
Well, you got a couple things there to check. Check the resonator. Give Bruce a call. Set up a time. We're down to about a minute. We ran right up against the clock on that. David, you and I never got a chance to talk about the bearings. We'll do this again soon and talk about what's going on with bearings.
All right. Sounds great. I got a lot of information. I got a lot more too.
Good. We've got a lot of exciting stuff going on, so we will we'll get to that one again. I want to thank David and Bruce for joining me. If you're interested in Fleet air filters, the number 251-654-0892. If you need to get a hold of Pittsburgh Power, 724-360-4082. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right.
Good night.
Thanks for joining me tonight. 30 minutes. We will be on the live call coming up. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Check out the website, letstruck.com. Good night, everybody.